It's often said in life there are only two things that are guaranteed, death and taxes. And while taking care of your physical and your mental health could lead to a longer life, it could lead to a healthier, longer life and stave off that death part, what can you do to legally minimise your tax? Since tax is likely to be one of the biggest expenses you have as a property investor, in today's podcast, I'm going to have a chat with independent financial advisor and accountant Stuart Weems about what options are available to you. Now, before we start, let me give you a quick disclaimer. Cheating or doing dodgy things to minimise your tax, it's wrong, it's illegal, it's never worth it. The tax department's cracking down on dodgy deductions and the penalties can be up to double the tax you would have normally had to pay, plus interest. And of course, if you get audited and they find some dodgy deductions, it's only going to encourage the tax man to look even harder at you. That's the last thing you want. You don't want to attract the tax department's attention, do you? However, if there are entirely legitimate ways to minimise your tax liabilities, then it would be silly not to explore them. And that's what Stuart and I are going to be discussing today. Remember, when you lodge a tax return, you the taxpayer, take all the risks. If you get audited, you'll be liable for the interest and the penalties, not your accountant. So we're going to give you some sage advice today. And of course, I'm going to share my popular mindset message. So welcome to today's show.
Welcome to the Michael Yardney Podcast, where twice each week you will learn a number of new ideas regarding success, property investment, and money in around 30 minutes. Our show is brought to you by Metropole, who specialise in helping you grow, protect, and pass on your wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. Now, here's your host, Michael Yardney, Australia's authority in wealth creation through property, who has been voted one of Australia's top 50 most influential thought leaders.
Building a substantial property portfolio may be simple, but it's not easy. Now, that's not a play on words. It's simple if you follow a system, if you follow the frameworks that other successful investors have, but it's not easy because it requires money management skills, delayed gratification, discipline, resilience, and an understanding of finance, tax, and the law. I guess when I put it that way, maybe it's surprising that 92% of investors never get past their first or second property. And of course, property investment's a team sport. So you need to get a team around you. You need to get a good property savvy accountant. You need a proficient finance broker. You need a property strategist. And in your journey as a property investor, after your interest payments, tax is probably going to be the most expensive outgoing for your property investment business. And if you get it wrong, it could even be the most expensive cost. So I'm looking forward to my chat today with independent financial advisor Stuart Weems, co-founder and CEO of ProSolution Private Clients, because Stuart and his team have expertise in tax, finance, and financial planning. Welcome, Stuart.
Hey, Michael. Great to be back with you again.
Well, Stuart, not only is property investment a compounding asset, but so is good financial decisions. One good financial decision will have positive consequences, and then you layer on top of that other good financial decisions and you get that multiplier effect. But one important consideration in property investments is setting yourself up to legally minimize your tax. So what advice do you give to clients when they come in and they want to get structuring and tax advice?
Well, Michael, I might just firstly say thanks for the introduction, but also I'm a registered tax agent and a chartered accountant. And I don't point that out to big note myself because I don't think admitting to anyone that you're an accountant is necessarily a good thing to do socially. But, you know, plenty of people talk about tax and I think it's good to at least to share your qualifications and credibility first before you do that.
That's exactly why I'm discussing these topics with you. So thank you for making that clear.
Yeah, no dramas. So,
but I think more than that, if I could say, you actually, as we discussed in our last chat, eat your own cooking, you're a successful property investor, but you also come from the financial planning and the finance side. So you've actually got that very holistic approach, which is very unusual for an accountant. You're not a typical accountant, Stuart.
I hope not.
Otherwise, you'd be boring.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. All right. So when people come and ask for tax advice, I guess the first thing to recognize is why people don't think about getting tax advice from the beginning. And it's really, there's some really good obvious reasons for that. So if we sit down and think about, you know, how property investments behave in our portfolio at an individual level, so an individual property level, I think that there's really sort of three distinct tax phases that a property will go through just from a tax perspective. So, you know, the first phase when we go and buy a property, typically the expenses will be greater than the income. So that's obviously negative gearing, and we get to claim or offset that loss against other income to save tax. And at that stage, you know, when we first buy a property, perhaps land tax isn't such a greater issue, particularly if it's our first property. If we've already got a lot of property in the same state, maybe it is an issue, but, you know, just in isolation. And capital gains tax isn't a worry because obviously if I go and buy a property, I'm not going to sell it 2 years later. So typically, the only tax considerations in that initial negative gearing phase is how do I save as much tax as possible? And that phase tends to last from anywhere sort of maybe 5 to maybe 10, 11, 12 years. And it really depends on the type of property, you know, how much accommodation versus land value you have, of course, and obviously prevailing interest rates. You know, you can go and buy a property today and some properties will be sort of neutrally geared. So because of interest rates and particularly fixed rates are just so low. So that's the first phase. The next phase is what I would maybe call the neutral phase. And that's where, from an income tax perspective, the property is neither producing a big negative gearing benefit, nor is it producing a lot of taxable income. It's kind of either even or neutral, but it's not that material. In that phase, land tax starts to become a bit more of a concern because it's likely I've held the property for 10 or so years already and the land value is hopefully appreciating if I've bought well. But capital gains tax still isn't a concern because I'm not considering selling the property. And that neutral phase might occur sort of between, say, 10 and 20 years worth of ownership. You know, between that period of time, that property is probably not going to cause you too many income tax headaches. And then, for lack of a better word, let's call the third phase the tax liability phase. And that's really after you've held the property for a couple of decades. Because after a couple of decades, you probably accumulate a lot of equity. If you've bought well, it'll start to produce more taxable income. So it'll start to cause some tax liabilities, income tax liabilities. It's likely that land tax would become an issue or more a growing issue. And look, sometimes depending on portfolios, you can see land tax ends up costing around sort of 20 to maybe 50% of gross rental income. So it starts to become a really big cash flow burden. And then after 20 years of ownership, people might be considering divesting of property as well. So then capital gains tax becomes a concern. So really when sitting down with new investors, there's not a lot of tax considerations to take into account for the next 20 years. You know, it's not until in 20 years' time that we start to have all these potential tax liabilities. And so it's very easy for people, particularly uninformed new investors, to really just focus on maximizing negative gearing benefits and not even considering any of the other longer term tax outcomes.
Stuart, I've often said that the average Australian wonders what they're going to be doing this weekend. Successful investors think 5-10 years ahead. But the very successful investors, the decamillionaires, they often think 20-30 years ahead. So I remember when I first set up my first family trust, I think it was about 1976, I couldn't see at the time the benefit of doing that. Why would I go to the cost? Same when I first got involved in a self-managed super fund when it wasn't mandatory many years ago as well. So I think that investment journey that you're discussing is very important to understand. And if you take a long-term perspective, there are different considerations to what's just happening today. But let's break those down a bit and look at each of those taxes. Land tax, people complain about that, Stuart. It is a wealth tax. It is a nuisance to pay. But maybe we should also start by saying that isn't it a good position that you are paying tax? It is part of what's necessary to pay for the hospitals and the police and the politicians. Well, actually, maybe we don't want to pay for the politicians, but I don't mind paying a fair share of tax. So we're not talking about illegally doing the wrong thing and getting into trouble, but we don't want to pay more than our fair share of tax either, do we?
No, that's right. I mean, tax is important as an economic mechanism to try and generate better wealth equality, do all those sorts of things. And it's interesting to see the debate going on in the US, where Trump was all about sort of cutting taxes, particularly for the wealthy, where Biden is the reverse, and even the billionaires in the US. I know Buffett's come out many times saying, that they should be taxed at a much, much higher rate. So it's important to make that contribution. But also, at the end of the day, what you're doing is planning your retirement. And at the end of the day, when you're retired, you can't rely on earned income. You're not going to go out and have a job. And so you're relying on your investment income less any tax that you need to pay. And that's the key consideration is, taxes relatively affordable or more affordable while we're working, but we certainly don't want to be paying too much tax, at least not unnecessarily, in retirement.
Well, I think the journey that you talked about was for an individual property, but I think it's also important to remember that a property investor has a journey as well. And so therefore your aim, and I believe you've got the same philosophy as me, is to build a substantial asset base so in the future you've got choices. Because if we are talking 20, 30 years down the track, we're not going to know, are you going to be able to negatively gear, aren't you? Is the government going to allow you to take your super at 60, 65, 70 or whatever? Are the banks going to be friendly or not? What we do know, though, is if you build a substantial asset base during your working life, when you can get the income to support it, you are then going to be able to, over time, lower your loan-to-value ratios and have choices in life, whether you choose to keep them, sell them, live off your properties, do other things. At least you're going to have choices. So there is a journey in property as well, isn't there?
And there's some fundamentally sound principles, taxation principles, that almost never change. So, of course, tax rules will change, tax rates will change, taxation in super will change. All these things, I'm sure it's inevitable. In fact, if there's one thing that's guaranteed, it's change. But there's some fundamental principles that we would apply when considering structuring a portfolio that aren't going to change, like having some discretion on how you distribute income and capital gains, or not having all the assets in one person's name. These sorts of fundamental factors, they're going to play out well in any tax environment.
So I started to talk about land tax, and maybe we should deal with that one first. So that's a tax on the capital unimproved value of your property, and it's a state-based tax opposed to GST or other taxes, income tax, which are federal taxes. So what's your advice to people about land tax, Stuart?
Well, I guess the first thing, as you said, from a community perspective, paying tax isn't a bad thing. From an investor perspective, paying land tax is also not a bad thing because it means that you've got a decent land value proportion. And ultimately, that's the element of the property that's going to appreciate in value longer term. So if you do have a big land tax bill, I guess the saving grace is that you probably also got a lot of compounding equity. So if your land tax bill is 10 grand a year, but your overall wealth is increasing by $400,000 a year, doesn't solve the cash flow problem from year to year, but at least you are ahead. So I guess in one way, let's put that in perspective. But of course, we should always look to minimize taxes. And we don't want to, and I guess it's important to point out, tax is only one of many considerations where not only financial planning, but also from a property investment portfolio. So we don't want to overplay it. But of course,
I think that's really important to bring up right at the beginning. You never invest for tax. You never make a decision based purely on tax because there are so many other considerations. So even though we're talking about tax for much of this particular show, it's got to be layered on top of all the other advice that you give your clients, that we give, and that we've discussed in previous shows. It's not a reason to buy, but how often do you see people come to you in your tax capacity, in your mortgage broking capacity? Hey, it's almost the end of the financial year. I better get a property because I don't want to pay so much tax this year.
Yeah, it's it happens, and it's kind of ridiculous. It's sort of, well, actually not really, mate. You're happy to pay the tax, but what you want to be doing is building wealth. And if you can build wealth and pay less tax, that's good too. That's kind of the icing on the cake. So when I talk about sort of land tax and how to minimize it, I guess, Michael, what we're saying is we're not suggesting that you should develop your strategy centered around minimization of land tax. We're just really talking about how land tax interacts at a portfolio level. So because it's a state-based tax, the best thing that you can do to minimize land tax is investing across various states.
Which isn't a bad idea anyway with regard to diversification.
That's right. And I think, we've got this because property is so physical, it's one of the attractions. You know, people can walk through it, they can see it, they can get an understanding of what they're buying, where that's not the case with shares. You know, it's a little bit more subjective. And so for some people, that's an issue. But the problem with the physicality of property is that quite often we start thinking a little bit myopically and saying, well, we'll just invest in our state. But really, in reality, if you've got trusted advisors and you've got a network of trusted advisors, it's just as easy to invest interstate. And there's some really good investment benefits of doing so. And then there's also some land tax benefits. So if I've got three properties, it might be good to spread those three properties, you know, one in Victoria, New South Wales and Queensland, for example, as opposed to putting them all in one state. That's going to help me minimize land tax. The next consideration I was going to talk about, Michael, with respect to land tax is ownership structures.
Yeah.
So there's different states will have, they all have different rates and different rules and so forth, but there's some, golden rules that you can apply in different states. So if we're talking about Victoria, putting a property in a family trust is more expensive from a land tax perspective. But there's obviously some other benefits of doing that. But if you're going to go down a family trust route, you're often better off to have one property per family trust. So establish another family trust if you're going to buy a second property and thereafter. Multiple properties in the same family trust typically give rise to more land tax.
Of course, you don't set up a trust for tax reasons only. That would be a wrong thing to do. But if there are estate planning reasons, asset protection reasons, and you happen to get some tax benefits, that's a good outcome, isn't it?
And if you're in business and you're generating business income, you can distribute into that trust. It makes sense. A family trust makes sense, but just don't put all your eggs in one basket, I guess, in Victoria. And the same is true for Queensland as well. Aggregating property in one trust in Queensland is not a good idea. Personal names is a better strategy. I mean, ignoring all other considerations, of course, but from a land tax perspective, owning property in your personal names is probably a better thing to do. And just notionally, I mean, I don't know if now's the right time to talk about this, but just notionally, typically I like to have property in personal names, shares in a family trust, and then you've got super, which is another tax environment. And I think if we look at, a portfolio holistically, not just on an asset class basis, we start to get a better picture on balancing out all these tax considerations.
Now, I think we should also give a disclaimer here. There's always a disclaimer at the end of every podcast, but let me say it now that this is not tax advice. This is not personal advice, and it's definitely not super advice because we are not allowed to give that. This is very general information, and it gives you the information to ask your advisor questions. Part of the reason people don't get the right advice is because they don't know the right questions to ask their advisors. So, Stuart, I think this is all very beneficial because even there are different sorts of trusts, and when you set up trusts, maybe you'd have one spouse be the director, sole director of one trust, and another spouse the director of a different trust. Lots of different ways of doing this. We're not going to go into that detail other than to open the possibility of discussions with you, the listener, and their trusted advisors. So land tax is an issue. It is a nuisance, but there are a number of ways of getting around it. But as you said, I'd rather, if I was going to open a retail shop, I wouldn't in today's COVID environment, but if I was, I would actually pay the highest rent I could. I'd like to be in Chadstone, the biggest shopping centre in the Southern Hemisphere, somewhere between Myer and David Jones, where I get the most foot traffic because my business is going to be the most successful and I'd be prepared to pay the rent. It's a cost of doing business. And that's the way I see land tax, Stuart. And interestingly, it's actually one of the few taxes that's tax deductible.
So it lessens the blow a little bit, I guess. But you're right. You know, land tax is a consequence really of investing well and being a long-term investor. And I should round out just New South Wales, Michael, because I talked about Victoria and Queensland. So be careful about owning property in a trust in New South Wales, in a family trust, a discretionary trust. It is about $14,000 per year more expensive. Ultimately, that's what it boils down to. So owning property in a, if I'm going to buy a property in New South Wales, I'm going to think either putting it in personal name or even maybe a company, depending on your circumstances. Again, particularly if you're self-employed, often we've avoided owning property in a company, but the corporate tax rate has reduced down to 25%. So it makes it a little bit more attractive than it used to be. But again, as you've rightly pointed out, there's exceptions that prove every rule. So it's important people get personal advice.
Sure. So I know many years ago, we wouldn't have suggested buying a property in a company. Nowadays, it makes sense for some people, particularly business owners, not the same company as their business. But of course, companies don't get the benefit of capital gains tax exemptions if you choose to sell the property down the track. So it's all got to be part of the strategy, a plan. I know you put a detailed plan together for your clients when you sit down with them. I've seen the great detail you go to, and similarly our team at Metropole do as well. So that's where you start. You've actually got to have a plan, and then all these things fall into place. Now, Stuart, I started with land tax, and I'm not totally sure why I did that other than the fact that I've just had a huge land tax bill increase again recently. But what about that other tax that everyone's concerned about, the income tax?
Yeah, so there's two phases with respect to income tax, because that first initial negative gearing phase, which let's call it the first 10 years, but of course it can be different, but let's call it the first 10 years. And then income tax liabilities, really when the property starts to generate positive cash flow, so a good level of income, and hopefully that occurs in retirement. So let's call that tax liability phase, which is really 20 plus years of ownership. So really they're contradictory, because to maximize your negative gearing, typically you're going to make your future tax liabilities worse. But to lessen your future tax liabilities in retirement, typically you're going to make some sacrifices on negative gearing. So there's a bit of tension there. So I guess the first thing I'd say is that money today is much more valuable than money in 20 years. So the time value of money sort of suggests that you should probably prioritize negative gearing, but that's not to say that you shouldn't consider the longer term impacts of your decision. And also, the other thing with negative gearing and minimizing the tax that you pay today is that it helps affordability. So if it means that I can hold two properties instead of one, the longer term impact overall wealth, so from a not only tax but income but capital growth perspective, it's going to more than offset any tax liabilities. If I need to maximize my negative gearing today to get that next property, in isolation, that's not necessarily a bad thing to do. So to maximize your negative gearing, the best thing to do is put all the property in the highest income earner's name so they have all the tax deductions. And then to make sure you get yourself a really good accountant, if there's some depreciation to claim, which you can still do on building, or if you make some improvements to the property, how to claim and fund and when to undertake repairs and maintenance, even making sure you've got all the loan fees and costs, whether it's a mortgage insurance that could have been included on the loan, or fees associated with refinancing, all those sorts of things, making sure that you're really maximizing every deduction possible in order to maximize your negative gearing benefits in that phase.
So negative gearing is important when you first buy a property and have a reasonable amount of debt against it, even though in today's low interest rate environment, as you said, most properties are pretty cheap to hold on to. But over time, the negative gearing benefits disappear, Stuart.
That's right. And it's going to start to generate some tax liabilities. And as I said a while ago, in retirement is probably the time when you can at least afford to pay tax. That's where you really want to minimize your tax. So it's good then to think about, how does the ownership structure that I'm choosing today, how is that going to play out longer term? And I guess to answer that question, or to consider answering that question, you've got to think about, what other assets will you have in retirement? What are their tax attributes? So if I've got a big share portfolio, for example, with imputation credits, that's going to change my tax position in retirement. Of course, typically super pensions that we draw from super will be tax-free, so that's not going to have a consideration. So really what we want to do is spread our income tax burden evenly across our between myself and my spouse, if I've got one. So as opposed to having all the income tax in one person's name, and that's where I was saying there's a tension there between maximizing negative gearing and minimizing tax in retirement. So if I put all the property in the highest income earner's name, and it's and in retirement my properties are generating, let's say, $60,000 of taxable income, I'm going to pay $11,000 of tax on the income. Whereas if I spread that those property investments between me and my spouse, I'm going to pay $4,000. So that's a compounding impact of not having or not considering really how the ownership structure plays out longer term. And so there's no golden rule here, which one's better than the other or which one's more important. It really does depend on the overall plan and the overall asset position and cash flow and those sorts of things. I guess what I'm saying is don't ignore it. You know, focus on negative gearing, absolutely. You know, minimize your tax position today, but don't do it without considering the longer term consequences of doing that.
All the more reason, as I keep repeating, is you've got to have a plan. You've got to understand what the end goal is, knowing that it's going to change so many times along the way, but it helps you plan to build the asset base that you're looking for. Now, another text that people keep getting concerned about, they leave lots of questions on Property Update about, is capital gains tax on my home, capital gains tax if I change my home to an investment, what if I go overseas, what are my liabilities? It's a tax nobody likes to pay.
No one likes to pay any tax.
That's true.
Probably. That's right. But it might be a necessary consequence of your plan. And if it is a necessary consequence of your plan, then you should obviously consider it. And when I'm saying that, look, sometimes the strategy for some people is to buy a bunch of property and maybe sell one or two just after retirement to reduce debt. Like, that's a debt exit strategy, for example. And if that's your strategy, then you absolutely should have a plan around minimizing capital gains tax. Now, if it's not your strategy, you still need to think about it. Interestingly, I was working with some mutual clients of ours, Michael, and they're at a particular point in time where they've realized their children are now young adults that want to get into the property market. These people have done incredibly well with ours and Metropol's help to build a really substantial property portfolio. They've realized that they've got surplus assets. You know, they've got more money than they'll ever need. And now they're thinking about, you know, how do we help our children with some deposits? And the consequence of that will probably, I mean, they've got some substantial liquid assets too, but we don't want to diminish them too much. So we're going to have to consider selling maybe one or two properties. And so that's where capital gains tax comes into play. So you're investing obviously to have a safe and secure and comfortable retirement for yourself. But if you do that really well, you're going to be in a position where potentially you can either help out other family members. And certainly that's where sort of capital gains tax comes into play. So the key rule here is to try and get yourself into a position where you can spread the capital gain across as many adult taxpayers as possible. And that can have a big impact. So, for example, if
maybe I should interrupt for a second, Stuart, and explain how capital gains tax is calculated, because some people may not understand that. You're the accountant, I'm not, but a capital gains tax is the tax that you make on the profit of selling an asset. And if it's residential real estate and you've owned it more than 12, well, there isn't any on your home, if I'm not mistaken, but if it's an investment and you've held it for more than 12 months, then you only pay tax on 50% of the profit, but you pay that at your personal tax rate. So there isn't a capital gains tax rate. It's your tax rate at the year that the tax is due to be paid. Is that correct?
Yep, spot on. So, and you can only have one main residence, one main residence exemption. So if you've got a holiday house, that's going to be subject to CGT as well. So that's exactly right. And because we get a 50% discount, the quick and dirty way to calculate your capital gains tax liability is just to multiply the gain by 23.5%, which is half the top marginal tax rate of 47%. So if I buy a property for $100 and I sell it for $300, I've made a $200 capital gain. I multiply that $200 capital gain by 23.5%, and bang, that's exactly what the amount of tax that I will pay at the end of the day, and my net gains, obviously what I keep.
So if you can time those, it'll make a difference, because if you actually have a few capital gains taxes because you sold a couple of properties, it may take you up into a higher tax bracket, Stuart.
Yeah, exactly right. So you've got to consider other income that you've got, other taxable income. You want to do it, sell property in a year where your other taxable income is unusually lower or lower than what it'd normally be. So that's typically retirement. And then, as I said, spreading your gain across multiple people is advantageous to do. You can do that if you've got a discretionary trust. You can't do that in other ownership structures. So there's obviously pros and cons. And if you've got a property inside super, one of the main attractions there is if I convert that into pension phase, which I can do post-retirement, I pay zero capital gains tax, which is a pretty good outcome. I think the first thing with respect to capital gains tax is don't be too afraid of it. Because the whole goal of investing in property is to make a capital gain, right? So if you haven't made a capital gain, you've done something wrong. So don't be too worried about it. And then the second thing I would consider with respect to minimizing capital gains tax is give myself some flexibility. So the mutual client that I referred to, they've got a property in family trust, they've got a property in personal name, and they've got a number of properties in their super fund. So when it comes to deciding should we sell a property and which one, not only do we need to consider the relative future growth prospects of all the properties, because we want to think about, you know, you want to sell the one that you think has the lowest future growth prospects. So there's that element to it. But then we've also got the flexibility to sell in different tax environments at different stages as well. And I think that's the overarching sort of theme with respect to capital gains tax is, unless your strategy is absolutely relying on selling something, in that case, you absolutely should build a plan around it. If it's not, then just give yourself plenty of flexibility. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. Have some diversification there and give yourself flexibility longer term.
Stuart, what all this shows is that the world of tax is very complicated. So it's really important to find the correct advisor to help you. And the trouble is, tax accountants understand about tax, solicitors understand about asset protection, financial planners understand a bit about how to make you money, mortgage brokers help you with the finance side of things. And it's not often that they speak the same language. It's not often that you can connect all the dots. And that's why I have fun chatting with you, because you actually are one of the very few people I'm aware of who actually does all that. So you're multilingual, Stuart. So my next question, some people are going to say you've got a vested interest, you're biased. But let me ask you, how do you find a good tax advisor?
I do have a conflict of interest, of course. So I guess you've got to understand a little bit about accountants and what they do and how they think to sort of answer this question. And really, accountants spend a lot of their time thinking about now or yesterday. You know, they're not really thinking about the future very much. Now, that's not to say that they can't, but they spend all their day really thinking about the now and the past. So it's a bit of a mental leap to sort of change your direction of thinking, whereas financial planners don't really care very much about the now, certainly don't care about the past. It's all about the future. So it's a sort of different approach, if you like. So what I find is that we tend to think very deeply about our own problems, our own financial plans, our own strategies, our own issues, and so forth. So if you can find an accountant that is a property investor themselves, I think you'll be miles ahead, because it's not about, you don't need to be a property investor as an accountant to understand depreciation or to understand what's claimable and what's not claimable. You know, a really good accountant will understand those things as it is, right? But the difference between the one that doesn't have investment properties and one that does is that they've thought deeply about how their properties are going to play out longer term and their consequences and so forth. So that's the first thing, is make sure the accountant is a property investor themselves. And I think the best way then to find a really good accountant is to find a really successful property investor and ask who they use. Just go by referral. And I think the same is true really for finding almost any professional.
Good point, yes. I think the other thing is you've got to be prepared to pay for advice. Now, accounting advice is tax deductible. But having said that, you've got to have a smart team around you. There's so much information out there on the internet. You can only learn so much. You need somebody who, as I said, is virtually multilingual and can bring all those various aspects together. So I've found that successful business people, entrepreneurs, investors are prepared to pay for advice, while the average investor gets their advice for free on the internet. Most expensive advice you can get is wrong advice, bad advice that's free.
That's right. And you've got to think about the accountant, right? So quite often people's feedback is, oh, my accountant's good. You know, they take a long time to turn stuff around, but there's no proactive advice. And they've paid them $200 to produce their income tax return. If you pay me $200 to produce an income tax return, I don't have any time to spend thinking about your situation. I've got to produce the return, churn it out, and get on to the next one, right? So, of course, you can't expect all the value in the world for paying a tiny fee. So really, the accountant's got to sit down and work out what is the right fee for this client so that I can actually spend the time thinking about it. Because what you want them to do is do all the work, put it down, and sit back from their computer for 5 to 10 minutes and really think about, if I was in the client's shoes, what would I be thinking about? What do they need to do? Because sometimes it's not tax related. Sometimes an accountant will pick up, I know in our office, account will pick up something that this client needs to think about. You know, it could be they're paying a too high of interest rate, or they've structured the loans incorrectly, or, you know, they've got too much cash sitting in the super fund, or all these sorts of things that aren't actually tax related, but they're things that can add value. But if you're only paying them a few dollars to do their work, they're just not going to have the scope to do it. They're going to have to churn it out and move on to the next person. So that's where you got to think about getting value for money, because I don't think there's any value for money in paying $200 to do something that's just manual labor. Well, there is, because I don't want to do it. But you know, if I need to pay $2,000, but I get $5,000 of value, well, then I'm miles ahead, aren't I?
Now, Stuart, I don't want this to sound like one big ad for ProSolution private clients or for you or your team.
I don't mind if it does.
But I just want to point out one of the things you mentioned a moment ago was one of the best ways to find an accountant is through referral, and find a successful property investor and ask who they use. Now, I don't personally use you because I've had the same accountant for well over 30 years, and he is a successful property investor and he knows my asset base and my businesses very well. But if you ask me for a referral, I would say have a chat with Stuart and his team at ProSolution Private Client, because you are more than accountants and you're not going to give them a cheap tax return. I know you're selective in the clients you work with, but I also know the quality of work you do. And I guess the word holistic is something we interestingly, both independently, use about the sort of advice we give. So if people do want to find out more about you, do you want to just give us a brief overview of what your company does? Because it's a lot more than just tax.
Yeah, that's right, Michael. We hope to inspire people to take a holistic approach with respect to developing a financial plan and building wealth. And so for some clients that have very basic needs, that they only might need, you know, some tax advice and some mortgage broking. For clients that are further down the track, that they need a lot more help potentially. But our goal is just to really build a relationship with a client over time. Their requirements will change and our firm will be well positioned to sort of execute and deliver that. But we're always focused, we're all focused, whether it's the mortgage broker dealing with the client, the accountant, or me as the financial planner, we're all focused on looking for opportunities for that particular client from a holistic perspective. And it's just about, like we've spoken about today, it's about knowledge, knowing which questions to ask. You don't have to have all the answers, right? So the mortgage broker isn't a tax accountant, but the mortgage broker should know what are the opportunities, what are the risks, what should someone be looking at. And our goal is to make sure that our clients have a good strategy and, most importantly, stop them from making mistakes.
I think that's a great point, that you're actually fixing problems, you're stopping them making mistakes because you've seen the landmines and you're helping improve their results. Now, others can't see this, but while we're talking, recording this on the back of your bookshelf there are a couple of books you've written. You write regularly in your blog and Property Update and for the Australian newspaper. So I think you're also a forward thinker. You're actually a let's call it a thought leader in these areas, which I think is very important. So I think you could do much worse. That's a very negative way of things. I think you should help yourself by having a chat with Stuart and his team at ProSolution. And by the way, this is not a paid ad and this was not planned, but as we discussed this and the discussion flowed, I again just saw the depth of your knowledge. So I'd be doing the wrong thing by not giving you a plug, Stuart. Now, don't get too swollen by this because we're not going to do this every session. But I had fun having a chat with you again, Stuart. Look forward to catching up with you soon. But before we go, how can people find out about your company?
They can just Google ProSolution or my name, or in fact, I would say grab a copy of My Favorite Child, Investopoly, a book I wrote a few years ago, because I think it really summarizes very well our approach to building wealth. And if that resonates with you, then that's great. And of course, you can use the discount code, Michael, which is your surname, Yardney. So if you go to a website, find Investopoly, put in the discount code, we'll only charge you $20 and we'll pay for the postage.
Well, that's a good deal. And I'll leave a link in the show note. Look forward to catching up with you again real soon, Stuart.
Fantastic. Thanks a lot, Michael.
I hope you enjoyed my chat with Stuart. And in a moment, I'm going to share with you my mindset message. And it's about how much time you have left, and it will give you a different perspective on what you do every day. I really think you're going to enjoy the message I'm about to share with you. But first of all, I'd like to share with you a review. I haven't read out a review for a while, and I keep getting a lot of these. And what I'm going to do is go back to saying thank you to people who leave a review by, if I read them out and you email me at michael@metropole.com.au, as I'm going to ask Jack to do, if I read out your review and you email me, I'll gift you one of my books as my way of saying thank you. Now, Jack left a review recently on Apple Podcasts saying, great podcast twice a week. He said, a 5-star review too. Thank you, Jack. I've been listening to Michael since March. What is amazing is that he's very clear, concise, and covers a whole range of topics. He's also got many guest speakers, and you get other people's opinions. The podcasts are twice a week and just around the right length of time. Thanks, Michael and the team, for all your insights. I look forward to continuing to listen, Jack. Well, Jack, thank you for that kind message, and I'd like to say thank you by gifting one of my books, as I said. Just email me. Now, I'm going to share that mindset message in a moment with you, but boy, have things been changing in the world of property recently. And I know Stuart and I were talking about tax, but there's all the finance challenges that are occurring too. But the market is still moving forward. But you can't count on the rising tide lifting all ships. One of the things you heard Stuart and me talk about was the importance of putting a strategic plan together. And that plan will include tax and a finance strategy and an asset protection strategy. And it'll make sure that you don't run into the roadblocks so many investors do. I guess that's the reason they don't get past their first or second property. Why not go to metropole.com.au and find out how my team can help you? We have a holistic approach to property investing. And by the way, we don't sell property. We never have. So our job is to help fix your problems if you've got some properties that are not working as well, or try to help prevent you getting into trouble as the markets are changing in front of our eyes, and help improve your investment returns. We help our clients grow, protect, and pass on their wealth. We've got wealth advisory, financial planning, buyer's agency, renovations, development, property management, business advisory, a wide range of services, and you can choose to use some of them or all of them. Go to metropole.com.au. I'd love to be part of your ongoing wealth creation journey. Leave us your details.
Now here's Michael's mindset message. Remember, a change in your thinking will lead to a change in your life.
In today's mindset message, I'd like to ask you a question. How much time do you have? If you had 25 years left to live, how much time would you spend worrying about the daily ups and downs of our property markets or all the negative news in the media? If you had 20 years to live, how much time would you spend trying to time the property markets or the economy or all those other things that are both unpredictable and completely out of your control? If you had 15 years to live, how much time would you spend trying to buy or sell a particular property at exactly the right price, the perfect time. If you had 10 years left to live, how much time would you devote to comparing your investment returns, how your property performance is growing, how you're doing compared to others? If you had 5 years left to live, how much of it would you spend obsessing over the financial news and its unforeseen impact on how your property portfolio or your investments or your business is going? If you had 1 year left to live, how upset would you be about investments that you made that didn't pan out, or the investments that you passed by that worked out without you, all those great properties that you drive past and think, boy, I should have bought that 10, 20 years ago when it was on the market then. If you had 1 month to live, who will you be spending your time with those final days with? What activities would you pursue? If you had 5 days to live, how much time would you spend trashing others on a website or attacking people on Twitter? If you had 24 hours to live, what would you want people who knew you to remember you about the most? How much time do you think you have left? Take a guess. Now, assume that you guessed right. Now what? What do you want to do today, now that you know how long you've got to live? Well, we covered a lot in today's show with my chat with Stuart and my mindset message, but I've got even more for you. If you'd like to get a bundle of books, my way of saying thank you for subscribing to the Michael Yardney podcast, well, it's actually e-books and reports. It's digital. Go to podcastbonus.com.au, leave us your details, and I'd like to say thank you. Thank you for taking the time out with me, and I'll give you that gift. I'll be back again real soon, but you can catch me in between these regular podcasts on social media. Just look for Michael Yardney, and I've got a private Facebook group where every day I leave a snippet of information to help you. Go to Facebook and look for the Property Update private Facebook group and join us. I'll be back again real soon. In the meantime, have a great week. Make it a great week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Michael Yardney podcast, which was brought to you by Metropole, who help their clients grow, protect, and pass on their wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. If you like what you heard and don't already subscribe, you'll find us on iTunes or on your favorite Android app as the Michael Yardney podcast. Watch out for our next show, which comes to you twice a week, and you'll learn some new ideas about property investment, success, and money in around 30 minutes. To get more of Michael's thoughts, go across to www.propertyupdate.com.au and sign up for his daily morning briefing, and you'll hear from not only Michael, but a group of leading property success and money experts. And just a reminder that the information you heard in this show today is general educational advice and not specific investment advice, as we don't know your personal circumstances. If you're looking for specific advice, why not ask the team at Metropole to help you?